Hi there, folks. This is Tony for the A Minute to Midnight show and aminutetomidnight.com. Don't forget our website. Check it out. Our shows and articles are all posted there, and we run A Minute to Midnight by donations, which you can do that on the website as well if you want to help us out. Today on the show, I'm very pleased to say we have Stan Deo returning, and I think this will be a fascinating interview. I want to welcome Stan Deo back on the A Minute to Midnight show. We had Stan on a few weeks ago, and it was a fascinating discussion about the Garden of Eden and some other things. And I did get a few questions, which maybe I'll throw at you, Stan, at the beginning. But it's great to be talking to you today.
Good to be talking to you, Tony. Yeah, I love our discussions. We go a lot of different directions, which is cool.
Yeah, and so I think we're probably just going to start with a slight different direction, just backtracking to the last show. Couple of questions.
Okay.
People said, Stan talked about aliens being killed in an underground base, and it's like, does Stan believe that aliens come from another planet? And I said, well, I actually think you believe that they're some sort of biological suit, but maybe you could explain what you thought, what you do think about that, just so our listeners know.
Well, there are two classes of aliens, in my opinion. There are those that are living entities, living biological entities with intellect and, you know, like compassion or lack of whatever. And then there are the manufactured humanoids that are not like with a soul or something. They are just like robotic beings that are use soft tissue for the main part instead of like, you know, metal arms and servos and pulleys and stuff inside like we make. So the little grays and maybe even the tall grays that are reported, in my opinion, are those kind of soulless, just artificial intelligence creatures that are sent to gather data. And I say this because of the reports. So many of them say that the grays that have operated on them or poked on them or whatever didn't really care whether they hurt or not, you know, the patients or the people they were examining. And there was a lack of compassion there, and the way they treated it was to wipe out the pain from their memory after they let them go. So that's different than the ones that are fallen ones from the parallel universe where Satan was cast out of. Those beings are, you know, they have an intellect, a soul. You know, they're not just some robotic thing. They are able to act like we are as far as mental abilities and compassion and things, even though they don't exhibit a lot of it. So that's the two kind of general classes. But as far as the type of kind of like biological robots, it's not limited to grays, little and tall. I think there have been enough reports, even from the Canadian former defense minister who testified, that there were many types of these biological robots that have been reported, many shapes and sizes. So I don't know why they need all these different kinds, but I am sure that the real kind of living humanoid things are allied with Satan from the wherever he's dwelling at the moment, on the earth somewhere probably.
So you don't think that any of them came from in spaceships from planet Reticuli or some other faraway place? Or
That's not their home. I mean, it's nothing to say that Satan can't get along a lot quicker than we can and go further in this virtual reality we live in. But that's not where they came from. They may have been sent on exploration missions by Satan to other planets and star systems nearby. And they may have some way to shorten the travel time between our galaxy and another galaxy or other galaxies, you know, a lot. So the main thing to remember is they are not from civilizations that originated on other planets or in other galaxies or in this galaxy. If they're there, if they claim to come from someplace like that, they have gone there and visited and maybe taken data and pictures and whatever and built infrastructure they need for the coming war with Jesus by Satan, in my opinion. Okay, in my opinion.
Yep, okay. And then the second question that came through quite a bit was people saying, well, it can't have been the Garden of Eden because God put a cherubim there and drove them out of the Garden of Eden and that and so on along those lines. You can see it in the book of Genesis. And I said, well, what if, this is my thinking, what if it is, and they are still there, and the tree of life and all that is still there, but in a kind of a parallel dimension, almost where the fiery angel's guarding it, perhaps, but you can't actually see it because we're not supposed to see it, because the Bible says that we won't be able to, you know, that we were driven out or whatever. But what if it is still there, but it's like you walk through it or walk around it and you're kind of taken away from it. But the fact is it could actually still be there. So I'm just wondering about your thoughts on that.
Well, there can be certainly a parallel form of the Garden of Eden right at the same spot that I've shown physically, but you can't see all the goodies in it like it was, because it's, you know, in the parallel world sitting on top of it. Or right with it. I am certain it's the Garden of Eden, the original one, as far as the earth part of it, you know, the physical part in our reality. You're not going back to the original Garden of Eden, which is in a parallel universe to us. You're not going to be seeing the tree of knowledge or the tree of life. But we can see in the physical representation now that there was a mound, a circular mound, like a table mound, in the floor of the crater, which was the Garden of Eden, where two somethings were planted. It's a very fertile, in fact, it's the most fertile part of that crater floor, so much so that the government has been testing growing different things on that mound because it's so fertile. Now, if that's where the Garden of Eden trees were, you know, knowledge and life, then they would have been fed by a little stream. We see it there in the path of it on that little table mound. We see the fig trees around the edge of that fertile mound, which, you know, Eve would have used to dress themselves. There are just a number of things that say physically that was the location on earth of the heavenly Garden of Eden that, you know, coexisted with it in those days before it was taken away. When the spiritual, like Garden of Eden, was taken away, well, Adam and Eve were still kind of in the region there, in the crater of the garden itself, and were placed outside of it by God. And they can't come back in through the rim, or they couldn't back then, to the full Garden of Eden experience, which has the spiritual and the physical together, in my opinion. But as far as the physical description of its location in the Bible, you know, geographically, that is the spot. There's no question in my mind about that.
What would you say to people that say, no, the Garden of Eden's in Iraq? I don't know where they come from with that idea, but there were a few people that said that.
Well, you know, they're entitled to their opinion. And what I've done in my research is taken all the clues I could find about the location of the Garden of Eden, put them in a chart, like a spreadsheet, and tried to prove every one of them applied to this particular location. Like there had to be four rivers. They had the water come up out of the land of Eden to the west of it. I found that there in Tanzania. I found the four rivers there all come to a head in the highlands there, in a place called Kumnana by the natives on the northern part of the Ngoro Plateau. The stones were hot because it's like 40 active volcanoes in the past there, and now only one, which is called the Mountain of God, Ol Doinyo. And, you know, it's referenced as the Mountain of God by the locals. So if they did that with Iraq, they were probably trying to make something close to Israel and close to Nimrod and the Tower of Babel and things like that. But unless they can prove all those four rivers and the countries they went around that were rich in gold and this and that, there are other countries around Iraq that have to have been rich in gold, for instance. There's just so many things that you have to prove occurred at Iraq or any other place instead of at the Tanzanian thing at Ngoro Plateau that I discovered. You know, the locals, you know, they think it's the Garden of Eden. And whatever their proofs are, I can't speak Swahili that well, but there's no doubt in their mind that it was, you know, where God created man. God came down and created man there, then took man out of the garden and God went back up into the heavens. That's their legends. And it is an interesting place, even though the spiritual Eden is, you know, may not be seen there. It is a peaceful place, a beautiful place even today.
Sounds good. And thanks for answering those questions. I hope that does give a bit of clarity to the people that wanted to know. So cool. Now, what's been happening today, Stan? What's your thinking about what we're covering?
Well, the thing that caught my eye in the last couple of days has been the ramp up to forming a 40-nation conference over in Warsaw, which started yesterday. Starts today, actually, our time. And 40 nations are gathered together, Arab nations and the United States and a couple of European ones, to discuss making peace and security in the Middle East. They want to promote a future of peace and security. Now, I found an article talking about Prime Minister Netanyahu talking with Vice President Pence about that. They're going to this conference in Warsaw. And then there was an article about other countries going to that. I've got all these on my show images page. Peace and security is brought up. And if you look at Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians 5:3, it says, "For when they shall say peace and security," same as safety, rather, "then sudden destruction comes upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape." Now, if peace and security conference there in Warsaw is aimed at getting everybody that's going to agree to a peace treaty between Israel and the Palestinians, and that peace treaty involves further partitioning or dividing of Israel to make peace, then we know that's an extreme violation of God's command, don't divide Israel. And if the United States is leading that, with Jared Kushner, then as soon as that is signed, agreed to by the parties involved, you can expect within days, weeks, maybe a month or so, a dividing of the United States, whether it be in the population being at war with civil war or earthquake, dividing us down the Mississippi level, or earthquake over in California, will be divided either physically or emotionally with the civil war concept. So it's very important we watch what goes on over at this conference there in Warsaw. I'm just, we're warned about that when everybody's saying peace and safety. We're talking about the Middle East. What is this conference on? Peace and safety, security in the Middle East. I just see prophecy standing out, like a pimple at the moment. It's there. And I've always thought that Mohammed bin Salman would be our Antichrist. He's the lead runner in analyzing people who have the abilities and the resources to be the Antichrist. Well, this week, his father, King Solomon, said to the prince, "Look, I'm taking away the portfolio that you were working with Jared Kushner on to make the deal of the century in the peace treaty." And so he's said to the crown prince, Mohammed, he said, "Look, you've got bad press now because you had Khashoggi killed. So I'm going to take over. I've got better press." Now, it may turn that when the treaty is done, that Mohammed bin Salman does endorse it or ratify it. But it bothered me that the king was taking his son off the lead argument on it, lead presentations and arrangements. Now, the king is old. He's been ill. He's also had a little bit of dementia, they said. So if he dies soon, Prince Salman is no longer a prince. He's a king. So we know that before King Salman dies, Prince Salman bin Salman is going to have to endorse or ratify the peace treaty over with Israel and the Palestinians and surrounding nations. So that puts a timer on this. Again, if I am correct with all the things I've researched about the six leading contenders, including Pope Francis and, Obama and all that kind of stuff, this guy stands out more than anybody as a leading candidate for it. So we have to watch that.
And you mentioned Pope Francis, because he's been meeting with Arab Islamic leaders and promoting the whole Catholic and Islamic dialogue and the similarities and so on. So there's moves going on there between the Vatican and Islam as well. That's pretty recent.
Now, what might put him in the running for maybe the false prophet, or that holds up the the Antichrist is a great person might work with Pope Francis, because the Catholic Church can represent both the East and the West wings of the revived Roman Empire. It's sitting right there in the middle. So I haven't, you know, aced him off, but for other reasons, I think probably he's not going to have as much, you know, potential to identify him as the Antichrist. You've got President Bashar Assad in Syria that's a candidate as well for various reasons. And you got General Qasem Soleimani in Iran, you know, not as many regions that I'd like to see, but he is a possibility. And even President Tayyip Erdogan in Turkey, you know, is in my list of possibilities. Of course, Obama on the right. But you can go to my, go to my show images page. You get to it off my website where it says, let me see if I can get to that. Right. On our website, standeo.com, you'll see our books and stuff at the top. And if you start to scroll down, you'll see a big sign, relatively big sign, that says YouTube and recent interviews. And if you just go under the word tube in YouTube, and you'll see show images. And if you click on that show images, and then click on the Hagman and Hagman update, and that will take you to my show images page for this week. And if you go down to something that stays there every week, to slide 13, it says, who is the Antichrist, the Assyrian Solomon of our time? You click on the picture, and it takes you over to the table I've built and update as things, you know, appear in the news that I can put into the analysis of each guy. So you can see that right now, the biggest number of hits is with Mohammed bin Salman. So that's why I'm leaning that way, but not being pedantic, so that people don't need to get excited about that.
Yeah, he's certainly somebody to be watching very closely. I agree. Whether he's the Antichrist or not, I'm not sure, but I'm certainly very, yeah, ever since you told me to be watching him a few years ago, I have been, and he's certainly fulfilling potentially, yeah, definitely one possibility, more than I think those other ones, as you say. Not that I'm sure, because maybe there's still a few years to go before the Antichrist is revealed, so I'm not totally sure. But it's interesting that what happened with him, with killing that Khashoggi, because he was not a nice man, but you know, it was turned into this whole political agenda thing, and it hasn't been good press for Mohammed bin Salman, that's for sure. So you know, whether that's dented things for him long term, I don't know. So we're looking at, you know, that whole NEOM development too, which was, you know, Mohammed bin Salman's baby, and this Saudi Arabia's 2030 plan and so on. And I see, you know, the latest thing with that is that in Saudi Arabia, they've actually now established a company, a NEOM company, for that $500 billion city. So that was announced at the end of January, a joint stock NEOM company will be fully owned by the public investment fund, the sovereign wealth fund of Saudi Arabia. So that's beginning, that 500.
It is. And yeah, there's another city development, super city development in Saudi Arabia as well, where they have the King Abdullah Economic City, the KEC, AAEC. It's going to be a city to have 2 million people on it, and it's the size of Brussels. So that was launched in 2006. So MBS's launch of NEOM, the NEOM project, is, what, 13 years after that city was set up. But they're going to be in a healthy level of competition between the two to get tourism into Saudi Arabia. The thing I don't like about NEOM is its location, because yeah, it encompasses where Moses took the Ten Commandments from God on you know. Yeah, so he's just going to put a development over the most holy sites there.
It's interesting too, because it's supposed to, it was built as going to be 33 times the size of New York, which, you know, there's a Masonic number. Straight away, they don't use numbers like that randomly. It's right. You know, it's deliberately chosen.
There's another guy too, an Israeli, that in 1989, I mentioned him and profiled him in the Vindicator Scrolls Volume 1. His name is Nimrod Novik. I mean, Nimrod and Novik. Now, he is a leading politician these days, advising, you know, prime ministers and stuff about various international goings on and peace treaties. He is Shimon Peres's gopher guy, you know, they used to call him Shimon Peres's poodle. He was that close to Peres. Hmm. But Dr. Novick was instrumental in setting up the peace accords in Oslo in the 90s, which was to pick a 7-year period to try it and see if they could make a peace treaty that would work in the Middle East. And now he's back in the picture saying that this is a good deal. And I think he may even go to the Warsaw summit here today and tomorrow. I'm not sure. But he's a very brilliant man, and he doesn't believe in God. This is the crazy thing about it. He's a Jewish man. Mm. He doesn't believe in the Torah, God, and all that holiness stuff. That's a quote from him in the newspaper. So I don't know. Will he be sucking up to MBS? Will he be involved at all? I don't know. There are just several people to keep an eye on. In your opinion, Tony, what will reveal the Antichrist to the world? What action will be the thing that does it?
Well, to be honest, I'm not totally sure, because I know people say, oh, it'll be the signing of a peace treaty, a 7-year peace treaty. But to me, I look at that scripture in the book of Daniel, and it's not really totally obvious to me that it's a peace treaty. It could be, but I don't know. I'm kind of thinking there'll be a lot of things to look for, to know when he's revealed. And I think it's going to be that many people will be actually fooled, because otherwise we wouldn't be warned. There will be a lot of people that'll be totally deceived. And I think he's going to have to appeal to a lot of religious folk. And my thinking is that he's going to have to be probably of Jewish descent. That's what I'm, where I'm coming from.
The tribe of Dan. In fact, there still is an underground movement in Saudi Arabia where they, based on one man's testimony, that the Saud family are descendants from a Jewish merchant near Saudi Arabia. What's the country? Was it Bahrain where he came in? Anyway, that's from the tribe of Dan. And the guy that was putting this rumor forward has been jailed, and I don't know if he's even still alive there in Saudi Arabia because of this. It was a threat to the Salman family. There are a number of things, like he's going to pitch his tent in, you know, very luxurious areas, you know, super tents, if you wish, which are buildings, and Neom is doing that, and it's by the sea, it's between two seas, and that might be one part of the evidence. Does he think himself to be God or declare himself to be God? Don't think he's done anything like that yet. So we wait for that sign. Is he going to be in charge of a global economy that causes you to have a number, you know, on your hand tattooed? Well, obviously you have to have him in charge of the world government first. Now, the thing that is kind of a curiosity to me about this is this. He has an Arab Muslim, you know, Wahhabi Muslim type background. And he has a track record. He has his own ideas and philosophies, which may not appeal to the broader picture with Catholics and Hindus and that kind of stuff. So I thought, okay, how can you make him seem neutral with no baggage, you know, bringing it to the people of the world? The only way I can think of, it has to be a guy that's born here, because he's, you know, born of the tribe of Dan and things like that. That whoever the Antichrist is going to be, that he's going to be just like a normal human, but he's going to be imbued with extra power and backing from the sky, you know, from the fake invasion that's coming. And I think once he's been touched by that he will start to have supernatural powers and impress the heck out of everybody. So we just have to be alert.
We do have to be alert. And people often say, well, you know, the beheading aspect of the things that you see in the book of Revelation, well, only people that behead are Islam. But actually, if you look at the Jewish Noahide laws, and there's a big push for them, they actually advocate for beheading as well, for blasphemy and so on, idolatry. Beheading is actually the punishment in the Noahide laws. And they're actually, I'll be covering this in some Minute to Midnight shows, so I don't want to get into it too much today. But there is definitely a, to me, that's an eye-opener, is the fact that it's not only the Islamics that do beheading, but that's in the Noahide laws as well. So whoever I think the Antichrist is going to be, has to be seen not only against Christ, but in replacement of Christ. So Antichrist is actually a dual thing. It's against Christ and also like counterfeit. So he's going to have to be accepted as the Messiah by the Jewish people. That's it.
I agree. And, you know, at this point, I don't see anybody that they would accept, you know, with current political structures. So maybe whoever the Antichrist is going to be will suddenly come to the forefront because of, I don't know, threat of nuclear war, a fake invasion from the skies by aliens. And if it's one of the living people that we've put into the possibility chart, then maybe it will change their status, you know, and people will then like him. You know, I just, it's not impossible, but if we lay all these facts out in our mind and keep going over them, then when we see the signs come to pass in the press, we'll say, right. This is the guy. And at the moment, the only one I can kind of say that about, you know, with certainty is Mohammed bin Salman. But, you know,
Mohammed bin Salman was certainly making a lot of moves towards all the religions before all this stuff blew up, this political stuff with the assassination of that, you know, journalist and all that. He was making a lot of advances towards all sorts of other religious groups, Jews and various Orthodox churches and the Catholic Church and so on. And I did a video about this at one point, as well as he's doing this whole NEOM build, which, you know, this mega city, which actually the building of it is due to be beginning in this first part of the year, 2019. So it will be interesting to watch what develops of that. And he is, I mean, he's definitely probably the number one person. Him and Jared Kushner would be two people I'd be watching very closely anyway.
Yeah. It's exciting times in one respect, but I know it means a lot of people are going to suffer. But
And of course, the whole moves towards artificial intelligence and all that. Bin Salman is big in that. That is happening very quickly. I made a video recently about all the technology that's coming together for a potential mark of the beast and how the biometric identification system is being put into place and a whole lot of other things with transhumanism and so on. And Mohammed bin Salman is definitely an advocate for those things. In fact, and NEOM is meant to be, you know, basically an artificial intelligence and robotically run city. So
a smart city.
Yeah, smart city on a scale that's never been before, like with the first robot being called NEOM itself. He was talking about things like that. So he does have grandiose goals with the whole artificial intelligence and all that. And he's got backing from big money that was coming from the US and people like Stephen Schwarzman behind him and Klaus Kleinfeld, who's the CEO and so on. So, yeah, I'd definitely be watching Bin Salman very closely.
You know, the Pope has, this Pope is just following what the other popes in the last 30 years have been doing. They've been holding global conferences between, you know, various religious leaders of all kinds of religions and bringing them together to see how they could have a common religion out of all of those, like Chrislam, you know, instead of Islam or Christianity, it's Chrislam. And so he's been continuing the push by the Vatican, this Pope, to form a global religion that incorporates all of them, which again kind of fits prophecy.
And it's definitely happening, you know, pretty big time at the moment, you know, because the Pope is, well, I know he even has some of the Catholics are not too happy with him. He's a Marxist for a start. And he, you know, he's had this historic visit to the Muslim world recently and basically called in the United Arab Emirates, calling for religious freedom and condemning the use of the name of God to justify violence. You know, well, that's conveniently missing the fact that the Catholics massacred many Protestants and so on in the past.
I think they did about 6 million, didn't they, during the Middle Ages?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It was a huge number, something like that anyway. But I think the Pope basically said, I would like to emphasize religious freedom. Without freedom, we are no longer children of God, but slaves, and one cannot proclaim fraternity, Francis said, and then act in the opposite way. So, I mean, fraternity, yeah, between Islam and the Catholic Church, yeah, this whole move towards coexist between all the religions and so on. At the end of the day, the ones that are not going to be liked are the Christians that say there is only one way, and that is through Jesus Christ, because that just does not fit in with the globalist religion agenda.
No, it doesn't. Boy.
Sorry,
go on. No, go ahead.
There are so many things that I see going on and so many things converging, but I don't think we're quite there yet. That's my thought. I know some people are saying, oh, we're right there, it's going to happen, you know, and people are expecting it to happen any day. But I look at things and I think there are absolutely obvious signs that we're heading in that direction, but I still think there's a wee way off till all of the pieces of the puzzle fit together. That's my thinking anyway.
Well, you could be right. You know, we've got President Trump in making changes and supporting, you know, trying to bring Christianity back into the United States. And he'll be quite popular overseas and maybe during the 2020 election. If he gets another term and is holding back, you know, the rush of fascism and socialism and communism, all those combined, if he's holding all that back, then, you know, he might hold it back until 2024.
Well, so, I think President Trump is actually advancing the globalist cause in other areas because he's pushing big time for the whole introduction of 5G technology, which is a part of the beast system. It's going to be the thing that they can use to implement all of this Mark of the Beast technology. And at the same time, what electromagnetic radiation to people's health is going to get far, far worse under 5G. So to be honest, I don't trust Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump is showing good things on one hand, but it's actually disguising agendas on the other hand. So to me, Donald Trump's being used by them as much as any of the other presidents have.
You know, I have to wonder, too, about that, because why else would he be supporting a peace treaty in the Middle East that will further divide Israel? I mean, that's just playing into the hand of prophecy.
That
just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, I don't think we've got to get our eyes off political leaders. Anyone that, you know, that's looking to politics and men are looking in the wrong place. We've just got to get our focus back onto God and onto Jesus and actually start taking prophecy seriously and looking at the end times, because so much of Christianity, it's just not even in that, you know, realm. When, you know, you're older than I am, but, you know, going back even, you know, with Christianity 20, 30 years ago, there was far more talk about the return of Jesus and the end times, and people were thinking about all that stuff, and you'd hear the word Maranatha being used and so on. But the closer we get, it seems the more people are going to sleep and thinking everything's just carrying on as normal, you know?
Well, look, I don't know when the rapture is coming. I think it's soon, you know, relatively soon. And it doesn't stop me from looking up in the evenings. I go out there and I say, are you there, Lord? Could you beam us up? You know, you might laugh at that, but it's keeping my eye on the prize so I don't fall asleep.
Yeah, and it's important that we don't fall asleep. And I mean, personally, I don't lean towards a pre-tribulation rapture. I'm not saying it can't be, because I'm not pedantic about it. My thinking is that we're going to be here for a section of the tribulation, and assuming that it's in the next few years and not down the track further. and then the rapture will actually be like before God pours out his wrath. But I'm not 100% saying that I'm right on that, but that's kind of where I think it seems most likely myself. So we will be here to see the revealing of the Antichrist first.
Yeah. Well, I would think so, because why else would Paul have said that to the Thessalonians? Has the Antichrist been revealed yet? Oh, well, no. Okay, then you haven't missed the boat. So he put that in there as a way to tell where you are in the timeline.
Yeah.
So if you're here to see the Antichrist revealed, then is the question, you have to ask this question, if seeing the Antichrist revealed is meaning you missed the boat, then why are we worried about it at this point? We're not going to see the Antichrist. If we're taken out before then, we won't see him identified, so it could happen before that. So, you know, all these kind of things, time-wise, tug and pull at our minds to try to make sense of it in one direction, and it's not easy. You have to study a lot.
You do. You know, the bottom line is, I think, that people need to actually, they've either got a relationship with Jesus and are saved, or they're not. And so many people can be looking at all the peripheral stuff, but the bottom line question is, have you actually committed your life to Jesus Christ? Is your life based around that, or are you just a religious person? And I think there are so many people that are walking around with religion that are not in relationship with with Jesus, and that's the bottom line. Is get that sorted out first, and worry about all the other stuff second.
Yeah, I agree. You know, a couple of days ago during my prayer time, I kind of try to imagine what Jesus looks like sometimes. Well, about 2 days ago, when I was doing my prayer in the morning, and my eyes shut, all of a sudden a big heart appeared in my internal vision. You know, like you could see with your mind, appeared just as I opened up the dialogue with him. And I thought, wow, isn't that neat? That's love.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's two sides to all this. It's like Jesus does love us, and that's the great thing. And, you know, we can be sure on that. But at the same time, God is also a just God, and there is a day of where people are going to be judged, you know, for everything we've done and so on. And so it's important for people to realize that there is only one way, and that is through Jesus Christ. Chrislam's not going to do it. No other religion's going to do it. Following the global world religion that's coming is not going to do it. It's only Jesus Christ by which we can be saved. And that is going to be the thing that's going to separate people. I think many will follow the system of the beast when it comes in, because we're being indoctrinated slowly and surely to accept all the technology that is going to be required for it. And I think in the end, most people will just slip in naturally to it rather than standing against it and potentially losing their lives if they do.
Yeah, and depending on when it happens and all this, that, you know, we have to have the mark. One of the reasons that, you know, some of the less aware Christians would take the mark is because if they didn't, they'd lose all their material wealth, house, money, car. You can't have it. You lose it all if you don't take the number. Whereas people that understand will have to become, you know, like vagabonds or travelers or something on what they can carry on their back.
Yeah, and God will have to look after the people.
There's
no other way, and I'm sure many will lose their lives. It's really interesting in the Western church, you know, people are so focused by and large on prosperity and, you know, how God wants to bless you and make you rich and all this stuff, which I think is false gospel. But you actually look back, and I saw something someone posted the other day on a Facebook, actually, in a Facebook group, about how the 12 apostles and the replacement for Judas, which was Matthias or Matthias or however you want to pronounce his name, and the Apostle Paul, how they all died. And out of all of that list of people, the only one that lived to be an old man and die natural causes was John, and he ended up on the Isle of Patmos where he wrote the book of Revelation. but all of the rest of them actually suffered martyrdom and gladly suffered their martyrdom. And how far removed from today's church is that?
Yeah, well, no, I guess, yeah, yeah. People are going to, Christians are going to have to pay, you know. Personally, I have been out of my body, nearly died, and went out there, so I have less fear of the process of dying, how it's done, than most people would.
What but actually, that was 1969, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Can you tell, I don't think many people will have heard of that. What actually happened?
Well, I was in the computer business in Dallas, a single man, and I had an apartment. And I had contracted some sort of a bacterial infection that it was the early days of Akkermycin 4 as an antibiotic. And I was in such pain all over my body that I went to the local hospital and said, look, can you fix this? So they gave me Akkermycin 4, said it's some kind of a bacterial infection. Let's try this on and see if it works. So I went home from the hospital. It was evening. And I took the first tablet and with water, and then just laid down on the bed in my bedroom, just, you know, trying to figure out ways to stop every joint, every muscle in my body hurting. It just really was painful. And so I laid down, put my arms out left and right, and my legs, you know, out like you were on a cross almost, but on my bed, turning this way and that with the hands and ankles to get the pain down to a minimum. And I was doing that, and as I say, it was evening, and I looked up at the ceiling in my room there and was just kind of, I guess, zoning, if you wish, trying to knock out the pain. And I heard the sounds from outside my apartment there, the swimming pool and people laughing and talking. I heard the sounds going down as though someone were turning a knob down on my audio until there was no sound. Now, I was curious of what the heck is happening here. And as I was looking up at the ceiling, I saw the light around me start to close in, darkness pushed it into a little tiny light right in front of me, and then it was gone, and I couldn't see anything. I thought, this is really weird. And then I saw in my mind my spirit body, I guess, rolling up out of my body through my shoulders and looking down at my navel, and right up between me and my navel was this like a faucet, and it was forming a drip of some kind of like water that was in slow motion. It went down toward my navel, and I followed it with my eyes. And when it hit where my navel should be, I bounced in the opposite direction, straight out of my body, up through the ceiling and into a smooth, silky blackness. It was just very comforting. And at a high rate of speed, I zoomed away from my body. Well, I knew the sensation that I was passing through a fluid of some sort. I don't know how I knew, but that's what was happening. And I did kind of turn my body around and look behind me, and I saw my physical body down there in that bed still, way, way away, and a little cord-like thing, connecting that body down there and me and my spirit body. And I thought, well, that's interesting, and then turned back around to see where I was going at an extremely high speed. And off to my as I was going like that, things started to happen in my spiritual body. I started to feel this fluid that I was passing through wash away things in my spirit body like they were dirt clods. There would be a puff of dirt and stuff and fly off my body back behind me, and I would lose envy or greed or, you know, various negative emotions you don't want. They would pass as soon as those blockages in my body were washed out by this fluid I was in, that space. So when I was all clean, I felt really clean. It's hard to explain, but I saw off to the right several movie theaters, or like stages, theaterettes, which were like TVs, really. And they were displaying moments from my life and with interactions with other people, mainly where I had caused them harm or pain. And as a judge of myself, I sat there not embarrassed. I would see how I hurt somebody or, you know, cause them grief, you know, cause them pain. And like now when we're awake, if we saw that, you know, put up on a screen, you think, oh gosh, I'm embarrassed. But I didn't. In that stage, I looked at these things as though they were lessons of life and saying, yeah, okay, I agree. Yeah, that wasn't cool. That's fine. And until there was like maybe 100 of these TV screens all going at once with events from my life. And I could see them and analyze them all at the same time. My mind had just expanded to many, many channels of input. And it was not difficult to watch all the screens at once and see what they were doing and be involved in it. And then finally, the screen started to finish, and this one would close off, and that one would close off. And, you know, and I was, during the process, I was able to see when I had harmed people by what I said or did or didn't do, I would see a few days or, you know, weeks, whatever it took, in their life beyond that to see how it caused them harm. And it was like, as I say, just like looking dispassionately as things that resulted as of how I interacted with these people. Now, I must say at that moment when I was having this out-of-body experience, I had been raised in a Christian home, you know, and I'd done my catechisms there in the Presbyterian church and all that, but I wasn't really active. I wasn't born again. I hadn't really had that personal relationship with God. So what I was shown, and as I told you, and plus a little bit more that came after that, was from a perspective of a young man who has not yet signed on completely with Jesus. And so when all these scenarios on the theaterettes and TV screens that were I was watching, when all of them finally closed down, I curled up like in a fetal position to resume the travel out there toward that distant light way out there. And I was comfortable and ready to go. And then something snagged me on the right side. You know, that rope I saw?
Yes.
It snagged me and twisted me around and started pulling me back toward my body. And I thought, oh, no, this is too good out here. And I couldn't find anything to grab onto to stay out there. It was just smooth and I couldn't grab. So I thought, well, if I just turn around and fall back into the body and find that cord and cut it, then maybe I can get back out here and stay. I didn't want to come back. So anyway, I relaxed like that, and bang, I was half in the body, the upper half of me, and the lower half was still like with a leg hanging on a very smooth ledge in that existence, and my arm and my chest and head were in this world. And so hanging on so I could get back out there, I was trying to figure out, what's that cord? Where can I cut it? And I realized my hearing started to come back, and I could hear that it was the phone by my bed right there ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing. So I thought, well, if I can knock it off the hook, it'll stop bothering me and I can get back out there. So I thought, well, I've got to move my right hand and arm to get to that phone. Wow. It was like taking a 10-pound ham and holding it with your hand back on the skinny part of the bone and trying to direct it to knock off that phone because my hand was just like a dead lump. And finally, I got it to knock the phone off and the receiver fell down next to the pillow there. And I heard my mother's voice on the phone, and she was calling my name and said, are you all right? I've been calling and calling. You're not answering. And in fact, your spirit just walked before me like grandpa did when he died. And I said, oh, no, Mom, I'm fine. And I thought I'd just get her off the phone as quick as possible and get back out there. And in talking to her and trying to you know, comfort her about that, my left leg that was hanging on that ledge slipped off, and I was trapped back here in the body. Now, I did know that my eyes were dry and dried open, and, you know, I did go somewhere and did do all the things I told you. So I came back in a body, and when I talked to Mom about it later, she said, no, I didn't call you. Had no idea. So I don't know, you know. And also, not long after that, probably, let's see, 69, 70. Yeah, in 1970, the next year, I was out hunting with some guys and with pistols, and I went to draw my pistol out and cock it, and I had been dry firing it when I shouldn't have with, you know, no shells in it, and I'd broken the firing pin, so it was lodged between the cylinder and the hammer. So when I cocked it, it discharged in my holster even, and it shattered the bullet. It was a .22 long rifle into my right leg, into the back of the knee, cut the artery, went all the way down the shin and down into the ankle. And it didn't hurt at that moment anyway. It just sent a shiver up. So my friend Jim raced me to the hospital there in our small town there in Mesquite. And the doctor looked at it, and he treated a number of wounds coming back from Vietnam. He said, look, I'm not going to dig into it and try to get the bullet out. There's too many pieces and it's all over the place. And we'd do more damage to your nerves and muscle if we did that than if we just patch it up, give you antibiotics and see if your body will, you know, close around it and you'll be okay. So, all right. He says, okay, stay here tonight at the hospital for, you know, a few days until we get this taken care of. Gave me a room, gave me, you know, painkillers and shots and whatever they do. And I was in my room on my, laying on my side and stomach a bit and bemoaning the fact that I'd damaged myself like that. And it was after 8 o'clock. They were turning off the lights down. It's a small hospital. But anyway, I saw a shadow come over my bed from the door, and my feet were pointing towards the door. And I heard this nurse's voice, and she said, look, we've got to put this on, this medicine. I'll apply it here, and it won't take but a minute. And I looked at her, turned around, looked at her, and she was like one of those candy stripers, you know, a nurse assistant, but just a civilian type thing. And I said, oh, yeah, well, thank you very much. I said, yeah. So I laid on my my chest, you know, my face down, and she got this cream of some sort. I started rubbing it on my back, and the only time I ever felt that same kind of warmness flowing through my body like that was when the Lord's Spirit came on me when I first revealed what I'd been involved into at a TV program over in Perth. You know, I'm sure it was the Holy Spirit. But whatever she rubbed on it just made me feel absolutely wonderful, you know. I could just kind of relax, and I said, boy, you can keep on doing that for the next 100 years. And there was no answer, and I turned just like that and looked. The tube of cream was gone. She was gone. I thought, well, okay, thank you. So the next morning at 8 o'clock, Dr. Perrone came around with his nurses to do the rounds. He said, let's have a look at that wound. So he took off the bandage and he looked at it. He says, good grief. Look how fast it's healing. That's incredible. Wow. I said, oh, it's that nurse you sent in with all that fancy, you know, medicine. He said, what nurse? Oh, we don't have a nurse on duty at night. Just the one down the hall there, and she could have seen your door. No one came in here. Let me go ask her. So he asked the duty nurse. She says, no, no one came in. So it healed rapidly. I kept my leg, didn't have a limp or anything. And I think I was visited by an angel then.
Yeah. So how did you actually get born again? What led you to that?
In 71, I was recruited to join Dr. Teller's UFO or anti-gravity research program in Australia. So I went down, and by 72, things were falling apart inside the organization. They were being either pressured by the satanic ones, the quote-unquote aliens. They were having fights in the bases. And my control agent was Captain Sir John Williams. And he said to me, look, here's all your paperwork. Get rid of it. You know, there's going to be no evidence of you or how you were connected to the program. We're cutting you loose. And it was because, he said, they are moving in on us. And so he was protecting me, but I didn't quite realize at the time. I said, well, okay, if that's what you want to do. And so the program shut down. And I was visited by FBI and then realized that I was being targeted or at least followed by KGB and Australian Intelligence, ASIO. So I went to do some work with a friend of mine there in the civilian world, at a taco place. And I stayed in his upper room and worked as an employee there for a few weeks until I could establish the fact that I stayed there and, you know, spent the nights there. And then I made a plan to one night at midnight after the shop had closed and everything was closed down in the city that I would get in the car with what I could carry in my duffel bag and I would head west over into Adelaide, which was a few hundred miles away. So I drove all night and then stayed there for a few weeks, maybe a couple of months, actually, in Adelaide. And one old lady, a white-haired lady, came to a UFO meeting that I was asked to attend and talk about some of the stuff I'd been involved in. And as I finished the meeting and was fixing to leave, she said, I know you've got to go. You and your friends are heading west. And I said, yes. She says, well, I want to give you this, and I want you to look at it when you get time. And it was one of those little Bibles that might be about 2 inches by 3 inches, and she'd marked some passages in Revelation, stuck it in my hand, and then wandered off. And I thanked her, and then we took off. Well, I knew that, as I say, there were a couple of intelligence agencies trying to get me, and so we were trying to be disappeared out in the desert, heading over toward Perth. And we were sitting there one night in the Nullarbor Desert. I traveled with two other people in their vehicle as well. And I was sitting there, and I thought, well, I wonder what that lady gave me in that little black book. And so I read it in Revelation, and about the numbering, and that kind of caught my attention. So read more of it. And then, you know, I thought, you know, I'm out here in the desert. Nobody kind of knows where I am. I'm probably going to die if they catch up with me. You know, these guys from the intelligence groups that were chasing me. Actually, it was a Jesuit chasing me as well. You know, a muscle man.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, Lord, I might be meeting you pretty soon. So let's talk. You know, I'm on your side. I want to be on your side, you know, and let's get this set up so that I can be with you when they kill me. Because I really thought I was going to get aced before I hit the West Coast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I made my peace with him and slept soundly that night in my car. Then either that night or the night following, as we were traveling across the desert, we stopped to make a campfire. And you can see campfires for miles away in the desert. It's so flat. Well, my friends and I were sitting there having a hot cup of tea that we'd made on the fire we built, and on some dirt and logs and things, we rounded up for seats, and we see the headlights miles away, one pair of headlights coming our way. And we thought, well, they'll just pass us on the main road. But no, they turned off to come where we were to our campfire. So everybody was kind of thinking, okay, is this when it happens? Is this the intelligence agencies? And one man was in the car, and he was almost bald. He had some hair, but he looked strong enough, like Oddjob in the James Bond movies. He was tough. And he came in and said, mind if I join you by the fire, guys? It's a bit cold down there. Fine. So he sat down right next to me. He could have sat next to the other guys, but you know, he sat down next to me, got where he could whisper in my ear eventually. And he says to me, you know, Stan, I know who you are. And with that, of course, I thought, this is it. I'm going to die.
Mm.
And he said, I was sent to catch you and disappear you. He said, but after talking with you and your friends here, I understand some things and what you're about. And I'm going to say I couldn't find you. And I'm going to let you off. But otherwise, I was sent here to kill you.
Yeah.
I figured, well, thanks, Lord. That's really kind of neat.
Yeah.
And there were miracles then. And the next day and the day after and the day after that happened, that we all just kind of shook our heads at. And the Lord made it clear to us by people that helped us, that the Lord had told them to help us this way and that way. And I've never turned back again. I knew that he was with me and would be with me always.
Wow, that's really cool. And yes, so if anyone's listening and doesn't know Jesus Christ yourself, seek him and make your peace with him. The Bible does say we need to be born again. Otherwise, we will not see the kingdom of God. So if you need help in doing that, people just email us or whatever, or go and seek somebody else and find out if you're not saved that you do need it. And changing that subject a little bit, Stan, for people that don't believe your story, you know, say, oh, he's just making it all up all these years later. Well, you know, your first book, The Cosmic Conspiracy, was written, I think, 1979. Is it right? Yep. And in there, you actually have copies of letters that verify exactly who sent you to Australia and so on too.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. You know, if you discount that for some reason, then look at current events and prophecy and see how they line up as showing that we're in the last days of this age and things are going to happen. Israel becoming a nation in 1948 is one part of the prophecy of the end times, then that's happened. There are a number of other things that have happened that fulfill prophecy. So people can get the truth of that regardless of my testimony. They just have to be willing to look, research, and compare the current events. I'm not the only one. There are a lot of other people, Christians, who are trying to tell people this is what happens, this is what's happening now, and it fulfills prophecy like this, and you need to get prepared so that, you know, when your physical body passes, your spirit goes to be with the Lord, and you will, you know, have a wonderful life there. Because probably one thing's pretty certain, well, absolutely certain, everyone on the planet's going to die at some time, but they're going to be, a lot of them die en masse, you know, as the wars happen and the the disease is spread and things like that, and the Armageddon conflict. There are a number of things that are going to really come very quickly and very painfully to the planet and to the people. So I'm not worried. You know, if they can't take those letters and the other proofs I offer, then that's okay. I've done my bit. I've shared. And, you know, there are thousands, I guess tens of thousands of people that have read my books or listened to my TV interviews over there and over here and, you know, have written saying, you know, we understand and we believe. And thank you very much for your testimony. There was one guy, a Jewish guy in Los Angeles, that rang me up one night from America down to Australia where I was, and it was daytime, my time. And he said, look, you know, my name is blah, blah, blah. I'm a, you know, an Orthodox Jew from a line of rabbis on both sides. And he said, I was in a New Age bookshop here in Los Angeles, and I was looking at books to buy, and there was one that was written by you, The Cosmic Conspiracy, and there's another written by this other guy that said, you know, we come in peace, love, and harmony, and all that kind of stuff. And he said, I had accidentally thumbed your book to a page that says, and when they come and saying they are coming as messengers of light of your friends, and they're coming in peace, love, and harmony, beware, this is a deception. And he said, the first thing I read in the other book when I opened up was, we come in peace and love. And he said, so I believe, I'm an Orthodox Jew, I believe, and I'm going to study the Bible. Well, a few months passed, and he rang me again. He says, I'm converted now. I am a messianic believer. And he says, I am lecturing to thousands of people, at, you know, a thousand at a time here and in Israel about the Lord and the need to accept Jesus as our Messiah. So after that one phone call, you know, thousands of people were saved after through that guy. So you never know what your testimony is going to do to one person, where it will go from there. And I marveled at that and still do. It's just, oh,
yeah, it's really good to share that. And I was just thinking, actually, if people are listening and they are not saved, that you don't know that you're a Christian, that you're born again, there is actually a page on our website, aminutetomidnight.com website, called How to Be Saved. Click on that and it will show you what you need to do to be saved. So, right. Yeah. Wow, that's fascinating. And Stan, you better tell them your website too.
Standeyo, STANDEYO.com. And Holly maintains that 6 days a week, gets up about 4:30 in the morning and goes till about 10, updating it with news and commentaries and things like that that people need to know relative to current events and, you know, prophecy together. She's really good at that, a real trooper. Yeah, the... Sure. Okay. In the Cosmic Conspiracy, talking about that, copies of that during the Clinton administration were in the White House and in the DOD. We know this because the Secretary of Defense at that time was James Schlesinger. And he sent message through a civilian to me that they had a copy of my book in the White House, in the Department of Defense, and that what I had said was the game plan. And then Prince Charles has a copy of it in his library. And it went to like over 260 or 70,000 people in 20 different countries, that book. And many other books have been written based on it. So it's never too late for you to communicate with others publicly about your belief and why it is important in real life terms. And I didn't know it was going to be spread that far and wide. But, you know, the Lord wanted it done that way. So I encourage you, not only if you're a believer, to not only just believe, but to get out there and help others see the need for Jesus.
Absolutely. And you're going to have copies of the Cosmic Conspiracy available again soon?
Yeah, probably after tax time. I'm so poor right now, I can't print another printing of that. It's just too expensive.
Okay. So, well, hopefully, that would be good if we can see another round of printing of that book. Otherwise, people can, I'm sure, try and get a hold of copies of it one way or another. And you do have, of course, other
copies.
Yeah, and you've got other books and various things like that available on your website too.
Sure. Yeah. As I say, Holly and I have both written and talked about things that are important for people to be able to endure various crises, whether it be a nuclear war, whether it be weather catastrophes, earthquakes, what you need to prepare, how do you do it, and, you know, there's, I think, 65 different chapters in her book, Dare to Prepare, that help people to prepare for emergencies of all kinds in their homes. It's not like go out and eat grub worms in the bush, that kind of stuff, but it's practical preparation for your pantry and energy and, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's all we do is try to help people with that.
Yeah, and it is important for people to be being prepared for what's coming. Don't just sit back and go, oh, God's going to look after us. I mean, God will look after us, but we have to do our part as well. And so, yeah, Dare to Prepare, that's your book on basically it's the Bible of preparedness, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so much info.
Yeah, the first responder schools here even use it. The book, well, there's that book, and then there's Prudent Places USA, where she advises in her book there, it's a DVD, about considering where you're going to park yourself, you know, for work and for access to amenities you need, like hospital if you're older and that kind of stuff. And she breaks down the 3,142 counties of America, showing, you know, on different maps and levels, what to look for or to beware of in each county and in some major cities. If you're planning to move, you know, to dig in, it's just such a comprehensive thing that's helped a lot of people figure out, well, I don't want to be in Florida. It's low lying. It's subject to subsidence. It also has a huge amount of lightning bolts every year. And, you know, there are other political factors. But, you know, when you put that many parameters, like I think it's about 65, 70, it's a lot of parameters anyway. I can't remember the exact count. And she runs every county and some of the major cities through that parameter list to see what is good and bad about it, what you can deal with. There's no perfect place because everybody has different needs, but yeah.
that's good. So, yep, don't forget, folks, to visit Stan's website, standao.com. Well, Stan, it's been another really interesting discussion we've had again today, and hopefully it won't be the last one that we have in 2019. Let's get back again sometime before too long.
Sure, sounds like a plan. If you see anything in the news that I can help you with, well, let me know.
Absolutely. That sounds like a great plan to me too. So thanks again for being on the Minute to Midnight show today, Stan.
Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Stan Deo. Don't forget our website, aminutetomidnight.com. Please visit it. We put our shows and our articles there, as well as on YouTube and iTunes for the shows and videos. And we do run A Minute to Midnight by donations, 100%. That's the only income, and we do require them to keep running. Which is much appreciated when people do help us out. And you can donate at our website, aminutetomidnight.com, if you want to help us out. That's much appreciated. Also, all the music used in the shows, I write, play, and record, and you can download music for free on our website if you want to do that as well. I think that's probably it for this particular show. Also, we have a forum, by the way, if you want to join that on our website. So that's it. We'll catch you with another episode of the A Minute to Midnight show in a few days' time. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll catch you then. God bless, and have a great week.